Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It's a pleasure to join you again. I hope that wherever you are, you have had a great start to the week. We now are cruising towards the end of the week, but excited to be back with you. It's been another enjoyable day with a lot of sports news going on. Obviously, with baseball now being over, the focus is on football. There's plenty of baseball news, plenty of basketball news, and of course, in the NBA, we're getting, you know, within, you know, now 3 weeks of the NBA draft, the next, really important date on the NBA calendar that I know a lot of folks are looking at. Here at Locked On Grizz, we've spent a lot of enjoyable effort, you know, giving you prospect profiles on several potential targets for the Grizzlies that make sense with the number 40 overall selection. And we will continue that. But right now, we actually want to take a break in this episode because, as I mentioned last week, I am thrilled to welcome, in my opinion, one of the best young minds out there, one of the best young NBA draft analysts out there when it comes to knowing the prospects, you know, doing mock drafts, you know, knowing what teams are looking for, and just in general, when it comes to general knowledge of the NBA draft. And his name is Ben Pfeiffer, and we will talk with him in just a second. I want to remind you where the show is, Locked On Grizz on Twitter, myself at StatsSAC. You can find the show anywhere podcasts are available, Spotify, Stitcher, the podcast app on your phone, wherever you may choose to listen to podcasts, we are there. And we ask that you listen, subscribe, review, and let us know how you feel. It's obviously, every time I get to do one of these shows, I cherish it, especially when it comes to interviewing, you know, someone that I hold in high regard like I do Ben. Before we get to the interview with Ben, do want to remind you of our title sponsor, rockauto.com. rockauto.com, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts you will ever need. Visit rockauto.com today. Well, let's get right into it with Ben Pfeiffer. Ben, how are you today, sir?
I am doing well. Excited to talk about the Grizzlies. They're always fun. So thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Start out with the general question, Ben, that's kind of been covered a lot of different places. But in general, you know, this draft class itself, we've heard it. It seems like this draft class is certainly down in terms of overall quality. It could be the ceilings that a lot of these players have. But I think that you also run the risk. I know that I have. I think that you also run the risk of not giving this draft class enough credit. You don't want to automatically think that just like 80 to 90% of these picks are going to be back of the rotation bench guys. You know, what are your thoughts about this draft class and how do you feel it could be better than some people might expect?
Yeah, I think when most people, you know, well, at least for me, when I, you know, refer to this class as a weak draft class, it's because this draft lacks high-end, like, star talent. There's really no franchise-changing stars. There's no Zion Williamson or Luka Doncic or Ben Simmons or even someone like Trae Young. There's nobody of that level in this class. Or even, like, Jaren Jackson, I think, is a prospect. Nobody of that level. So, and that's kind of the most important thing, you know, that you look for in a draft. Yeah, you want to be able to land those prospects that change the trajectory of the franchise. And 2020 probably doesn't have that guy. And if it does, it only has one, maybe two that have a breath of a chance. But there are like a lot of players, like the players at the top, or at least the ones that I have at the top, like a lot of them could be, you know, very, very good NBA players. Like I think of someone like Killian Hayes, who I have near the top of my board, who, you know, maybe doesn't have like really franchise changing upside or anything, but has quite a bit of upside, I think, as like a really like maybe like an all-star ceiling as, you know, a complimentary guard who, you know, can defend all positions and is a monster defender off the ball and is going to bring lots of utility as a passer and a scorer, but, you know, might not be able to lead your offense, but it's someone who's going to be really useful. So I think there's a lot of guys towards that at the top. And I think there's going to be a lot of really good value in this draft for teams picking, you know, from 10 to 20. I think there's going to be a lot of players that fall way further than they should, you know, late in the second, I think there's going to be strong value. So I think that can be said about most drafts, but I think this draft definitely with, you know, it's been months since we've had, you know, any like real new relevant information on these prospects. So there's going to be lots of weird moves, I think. So yeah, I mean, there's going to be a chance for some smart teams to really exploit, you know, some of the inefficiencies in this draft, I think.
Well, then that leads me to another question that I will ask in terms of, you know, looking at this class and looking at, you know, what teams, you know, really value when it comes to their draft picks, especially as you get out of, you know, the top 10 into the, you know, past the lottery. You know, the Grizzlies themselves, they had a guy in Brandon Clark who was near 23 years old. You know, he's more of a quote-unquote finished prospect. He's more of a guy who, while he has a high ceiling, he's an older prospect. Your thoughts on that? Could you see more of teams going with the prospects that they know more of, these high floor guys, instead of just always going with the high upside that we've seen and kind of towards the back end of the draft, like an Xavier Tillman and players such as that? These high floor guys could take on more value because in a year where there's less chance of getting certainty and a year where upside's not as great, maybe going with the guys who you know could likely be high floor and may exceed their ceiling, they may be more attractive this year.
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of that isn't just, you know, picking the guys with the higher floor and lower ceiling. I think it's also, you know, being able to identify what floor and ceiling actually means. I mean, I was someone who had Brandon Clark crazy high. I had him top three on my 2019 final board, and that looks pretty good, I think, at the moment. I always thought his upside was, you know, a lot higher than he got credit for. Yes, he's 23, but he's been on a rapid development curve. You know, the offensive upside, I think, was clear. You know, I think he showed more this year as a scorer than people thought with his, you know, kind of crazy floater game. He's obviously a dominant role man. And then, you know, defensively, I think there's tons of upside there given his tools and his intelligence. But yeah, I mean, I think just kind of like rethinking, you know, what really is valuable. Like Brandon Clark, like a modern, you know, 4-5 big man who does so many things on both ends is supremely valuable, especially in the playoffs in high leverage moments. And you brought up Xavier Tillman, who I absolutely love. I absolutely think Tillman, you know, while I think he's like less of an upside play than Clark, and is certainly, you know, a much worse prospect than Brandon Clark was. Still, he's, you know, a big man, a center who has the theoretical upside to be a guy who can contribute in the playoffs pretty early in his career. And I think that's, and you know, for a long time. And that's the thing that's super valuable and not easy to find. Because I mean, in the playoffs, I think more than anything, you really need guys who – you really need big men especially who can make quick decisions, obviously who can be versatile defensively. And then, you know, shooting is nice, which Tillman at the moment lacks. But, you know, Tillman, you know, when it comes to making quick decisions, he is, you know, the best in this class, best, you know, really, really elite there, has all the big man handling, some of the low post finishing. Defensively, he's a genius. He's strong. He's not the most versatile. Like, he's no Onyeka Okongwu in terms of versatile big men in this class, but – you know, he can move enough, I think. So he's a guy like who could be really valuable, like for a team in like a play for a good team in a rotation in high leverage minutes early, which is something, like you said, might not be as flashy as, you know, a prospect with, you know, with a raw younger prospect with some crazy athleticism, but it could probably is going to be more useful in the long run.
And that will be kind of what I'm leading to as far as the identity of this class when you look at it overall. You know, what is, you know, maybe the top two skill sets where there is the most depth? To me, it kind of stands out as maybe rotation type guards, top of the rotation type guards. You just see a lot of either versatile guards or guards who do have the ability to be kind of those microwave scorers, even at, you know, the back end of the first round, early second round. Grant Riller or Isaiah Joe as those microwave type scorers, and then Tyrese Halliburton, Killian Hayes, other players such as that. You know, what do you feel are the top two traits in this draft class that there are some depth in, even though there's not a ton of upside overall, but there is a lot of depth in?
Yeah, I think one of them you definitely hit on is there's tons of guard depth. Just throughout, I mean, the top prospects are guards, you know, LaMelo Ball, Killian Hayes, Anthony Edwards, if you wish. I have Grant Riller and Isaiah Joe, like you said, both much higher than back end of the first round. I think they're both fantastic prospects. You know, you have Cole Anthony, Kyra Lewis, and then as you go further down into like the late first, early second, mid second, you have prospects like Malachi Flynn, Tao Maledon, Tyrell Terry, Devon Dotson, Nico Mannion, Trey Jones, Cassius Winston. There's just so many of these guys. And, you know, even if you go lower into like the late second range, more sleepery types, you have, you know, Jalen Harris or someone like Miles Powell or Sam Merrill. There's just so many of these guards that I think, you know, I'm generally skeptical of like drafting guards. I don't think you're going to be starters because I think there's kind of a pretty high threshold, you know, to be a successful backup guard or, you know, just starting guard in the NBA when you're small, especially. But there are, you know, a lot of guys, I think, in this class who could, you know, maybe not be starters or even stars, but could fill roles like Nico Mannion. You could see him filling like an off-ball 3-and-D guard role, or like Trey Jones, like another 3-and-D point guard kind of role, or Devon Dotson as like a slashing backup guard, or Malachi Flynn as like a crafty pick and roll guard. There's lots of roles these prospects could fill. So I think you definitely hit on that one. I think the other one that kind of has a lot of it's interesting. Has a lot of guys. It's like this archetype that's becoming increasingly more valued and important in the NBA. And that's like the three. It's less three and D, but it's like three and rim protection archetype. So, you know, these like versatile 3-4 types that can, you know, hit a shot and protect the rim. And for me, the foremost one of these is Patrick Williams out of FSU, who, you know, he's 18th youngest American player in the draft, an incredible rim protector. I think it's his best skill. Just his verticality, his timing, his explosion, his tools, all there. And then a guy who, you know, should be able to shoot given his history of shot making and what he showed this year. But then, you know, outside of Patrick Williams, you know, assuming if he learns how to shoot, I think Danny Avdija, I think, falls into that category as well. Even like Poku is kind of there, but obviously he's much better, I think. And then as you go down, you have prospects like Jaden McDaniels, Tyler Bay, Robert Woodard, even kind of like Jalen Smith, Paul Reed, if he shoots, or all of this kind of archetype. Even looking into international, you know, some stashes, you have like Boris Osiminic, who's kind of a three and rim protection type, even, you know, different guys like that. So I think that three and rim protection is the other real like kind of value in this class, where there's a lot of those guys. So there's a lot of those guys, you know, that could be pretty solid.
Of those names that you mentioned in that second group, that actually is a wonderful segue as to what will come up in our second segment. A couple of names you didn't mention in that group. There may be a reason why, but coming up, we're going to talk about a few of those that are pretty special in the minds of Memphis. We'll be right back here with Ben Pfeiffer.
As you may have noticed, it now is extremely cold outside. Well, not extremely cold, but much cooler outside than it was just a few short weeks ago. So fall is officially here, and you're likely on the go now with your kids being back in school, there being activities going on, and the holidays are right around the corner. It's the least opportune time for your car to have trouble. But as we all know, that's exactly what's likely to happen. Well, if you're someone like me, I can't tell you how to repair your car, but I can tell you where to go to get the parts that you need, and that's rockauto.com. For a variety of reasons, rockauto.com is great to know. It's very easy to use. Within a few clicks of a button, you're going to find what you need. And also, you're very likely to find what you need because they're usually going to have any part that you may need for any make and model that you may have. Whether you do your own repairs, you've got to get someone to do them for you, or you do car repairs for a living, rockauto.com is a great source because they're very cost effective. This is a family-owned business. They know that car repairs typically fall outside of the usual budget, so they try to make things as economically feasible as possible. If you go to rockauto.com, let them know that the Locked On Podcast Network sent you. RockAuto.com, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts you will ever need. Visit RockAuto.com today.
So, Ben, I couldn't think of a better way for you really to lead into what was going to be this part of the conversation, in which we're going to talk about James Wiseman and Precious Achiuwa, and I cannot get his last name right. I'm horrible when it comes to prospect names.
All right.
But you talk about those 3-and-D archetypes, the rim protection plus the three-point shooting. And we'll start with Wiseman. Now, me and you talked previously about Wiseman, and I feel when it comes to Wiseman, that 3-and-D archetype hits the nail on the head. You know, in the lane, he's going to be able to flash elite talent. He's got the physical type to it. The decision-making is something that's in process. Me and you both have talked, I think that he could be all-star as a traditional type center, but a couple of things. Can he develop that perimeter game both on offense and defense? That feels like one question. And the second question is, can he become valuable? Can he remain valuable in high leverage and playoff situations? Are those kind of the questions that NBA talent evaluators have about him and that really need to be answered for him to reach the level many think he does have?
Yeah, those are certainly the questions for me. I mean, definitely. You hit on some of the issues that I definitely have with Wiseman. Just, you know, overall, he's obviously the size and the pure open floor athleticism give him a pretty decent offensive floor as like a first as a role man, or, you know, just the sheer size. He's a pretty good screen setter as well as freshman bigs go. So, you know, I think he's going to be a pretty good role man as he develops just because of the sheer tools. And then, you know, he's a guy who you can just see him, you know, let's say in semi-transition or something, he runs to the rim, you know, gets a duck in and just he catches the ball and dunks it because he's so big. Like those are plays that raise your offensive floor. And I think that's what he would do for a team. The issue, like you said, is with his ceiling as the perimeter game is a huge question mark. going back to high school and AU, the decision-making is really rough. The shot has never been good. I think there's some potential as like a face-up score with a little bit of coordination. And the shot, I think, looked a little better during his time, his short time at Memphis. But the offensive game is definitely, I think, problematic in terms of projecting any sort of high upside. And defensively, like you said, he should be a pretty solid rim protector just because he's massive. You know, just park him at the rim, or you know, play him in an exclusively a deep drop kind of system where he doesn't really have to move, and just you know, have him be a body that absorbs contact and you know, deters smaller guards or even bigger players from shooting because he's so large. But if you're going to ask him to, you know, play up at the level of the screen or try to switch or hedge or you know, face a team that's making him think and make complex rotations, I think he's really going to struggle because, you know, while he has the size and the open floor athleticism, he really lacks, you know, the short area quickness and the high level instincts, you know, as a rim protector. So I think those are kind of the ceilings. I think that's absolutely a concern, where I just don't think he's a guy who presents you a situation to where he's going to be useful in really high leverage situations. I think Wiseman, I mean, I'm not a Wiseman fan. Like, I don't have him very high on my board, but I think he's a pretty good prospect. Like, there's a good chance that he's a starting level big man in the regular season who puts up pretty solid box score numbers and counting numbers. Like, maybe even enough to get him an all-star nod at some point. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of holes in his game to me, but also a lot that, you know, gives him a pretty good floor, I think, as a solid NBA big man, which is worth something. And the fact that, you know, because he is a big name and is going to be a high pick, he's going to have a longer leash than some of these other guys. You know, it's should be allowed to make mistakes and grow, which will be good for him.
So, of course, the other, you know, name is Precious here in Memphis. You know, of course, Wiseman just unfortunately ran into some unexpected difficulty being able to play. You know, it was just unfortunate for the city of Memphis, but it did allow for Precious Achiuwa to be able to step up in his game and really emerge as, I think, the top-tier talent on that Memphis team. You know, we've heard the things about Precious. You know, good defensive upside, versatility, especially for a front-court player. You know, looks like he does have a reliable bag of tools when it comes to his offensive game. I don't necessarily know what the star level potential there is. It seems like he's more of a solid rotational piece that could manage very well, especially across the board in the NBA. But that defensive versatility kind of seems like it may be his calling card. What do you think about him as kind of being a mid-teens to late-teens type pick, or maybe even sneaking in the lottery for a team?
Yeah, I'm not a huge Precious fan. I don't have him. I have him pretty low relative to consensus, but I've definitely grown to like him more than I did. And like you said, I think he really is a good defensive prospect. I previously don't think I gave him enough credit for that, just because, you know, he can be kind of erratic and make bad decisions. But he really does have some impressive moments as a rim protector. You know, when he is able to think on the fly and act quickly, he is so explosive and covers so much ground and can really protect the rim, make some awesome rotations. And I think his mobility on the perimeter is a little overstated sometimes. I don't think he's like a true switch big, but definitely someone who can perform a late switch, get out on an island against, you know, maybe even like a guard with the shot clock running down and contain him. Definitely someone as he matures, I think, could hedge a little bit, you know, play at the level of the screen, unlike Wiseman. Issue is, I mean, I think this, like, the pure height is always going to be a limiter for him playing at the five, which I think is really his only tenable position because of the offense. But I mean, his standing reach is massive. He's crazy explosive. So I think, you know, small ball five is certainly the position for him. I just have a lot of concerns offensively. Precious shot 59.9% from the free throw line and had an assist to turnover ratio of 0.3. The only NBA, like the only real, the only player in the last, you know, decade or so who's hit those, who's had those, you know, those similarly bad numbers there and has been an NBA player is Kenneth Faried. So the historical comparisons for his statistical profile aren't super inspiring offensively. I think his best chance is just as like a diving roll man in the half court, because obviously he is super athletic. You know, his motor is crazy, so he'll grab the offensive boards. You can just get in space, roll, maybe use him as a cutter. Obviously, in transition, he's, you know, terrifying running in the open floor, especially when he grabs the rebound and can push. So I think there's some value there. I just think it's really problematic when you put the ball in his hands and ask him to make decisions. Well, I think there are some flashes there. You know, I saw this year. He did some DHO passing from the elbow a little bit in transition. Just not convinced he's an NBA level decision maker, which I think is really important at the five in the modern NBA. But I think small ball five, who's a really good role man. I would not hate like a good team taking Precious in the first round. I think that's absolutely a reasonable pick. If you have a good infrastructure, like a team like Milwaukee or Toronto, you know, who has a strong developmental culture and, you know, has the need for that, you know, can afford to play him there. Cause I think Precious as, you know, a full-time small ball five who kind of just exploit the slower plotting big man in the league, you know, with his pure athletic tools, be effective defensively, you know, have a small role offensively next to some really good offensive talent. I think there's a chance for him to, you know, find a niche in the NBA, really carve it out and be successful. But I just don't see any real high end upside. I think people will, you know, see the crazy athletic tools and just assume, you know, upside because of that. But I think that upside's a lot more nuanced than that. Than just athletic tools. It comes down to skills and intelligence and also age. I think age is one of the most predictive determinants of upside, and Precious is already 21 years old, despite being a freshman, which is definitely a knock on that upside to me. So, but yeah, I mean, Precious is a pretty good prospect. I think Wiseman's a better prospect pretty handedly. But I think Precious could definitely be solid if he lands in the right spot.
So outside of Memphis, another college that, you know, in recent years the area of Memphis, the Memphis basketball scene has probably gained more knowledge of is Gonzaga. Of course, you know, a little bit of a rivalry, you know, in games between Memphis and Gonzaga, a local prospect here by the name of Jonathan Williams, you know, from a few years back. Yep. He went to play at Gonzaga, I believe.
Yep.
But of course, now also there's the Brandon Clark pick. And this year, it seems like that what we've seen from the preferences of head coach Taylor Jenkins for the Grizzlies, another Gonzaga prospect who is a big and skill set certainly projects to this day and age is Killian Tilly. His shooting ability, high IQ, high intelligence, it certainly jumps off the page. The problem with Tilly is he's got to be available and on the court. But he makes a lot of sense for Memphis, in my opinion. Bid, what are your thoughts on him as a potential target for the Grizzlies?
Absolutely. I love that. I think Tilly's fantastic. Like you said, you know, the first thing to address with him, always the injuries, has been injury prone, even, you know, since before going back before his Gonzaga career, has dealt with pretty crippling injuries and has just sustained those throughout his whole college career, which is so unfortunate considering he is such an incredible talent. It's kind of a perfect big for the modern NBA, like you said. I mean, somebody I'd call an elite shooter for his position, definitely an elite big man shooter throughout his college career. You know, just a genius passer on the short roll in the post, even some, you know, off the dribble, great screener. You know, even has some, you know, impressive handles for a big man. So that's always there. And then defensively, you know, just a genius such a great communicator, excellent on the back line, makes the best rotations, directs rotations. And well, I don't think he's as mobile as he once was. I think some of the injuries have zapped a little bit of his mobility, certainly plus mobile for a big man, I think. So he's a perfect fit in the modern NBA. And, you know, despite the injury, I think he's like an absolute steal where he's projected currently in like the mid late second. Cause even if you're getting, let's say, 60 healthy games of Killian Tilly on, you know, in his first year or two, those are games where I think he's legitimately someone who could contribute in the playoffs early in his career. And that's incredibly valuable, even if for a short time. And Killian Tilly is pretty much free. I mean, any team can get Killian Tilly, can buy or trade for a late second and draft Killian Tilly. So that's, I think he'd be a super awesome fit with Brandon Clark. You know, an offensive front court of him and Jaren Jackson could just bomb threes, and then that would be just insanely fun. Yeah, I mean, Memphis is already somewhat of like the draft Twitter fanboy team, you know, fan team, just because of all the fun prospects they have, you know, not just Clark and Jaren and Ja, but Conchar and Melton. Tilly there, I think that would be an incredible fit. I would love that.
I agree completely. And, you know, with Memphis at 40, it seems like they're right in that range. Yeah, but we're going to
stellar pick.
Yeah, yes, and that's what I've seen. If he can stay healthy, and I think that with the developmental ability of you know, our front office and with Jenkins, I think he would make sense. What we're going to do is we're going to stick with the shooting aspect of things. I'm going to stick with that when it comes to Ben. You know, we can talk about the names of prospects all day long, but what really sticks out to statistically that indicates good shooting potential in the NBA? Ben's going to show us some different ways we can look at that coming up. So, Ben, I'm in here in a second. I'll ask you about some potential sleeper prospects that really stand out in this draft, you know, especially kind of the late first, early second round. But when you're looking at these prospects, and of course, shooting is so important now in the NBA, a couple of things I really want to know. What are a few statistical things that you look at, not in terms of what they did in college, but important things that can tell you this guy, though he may not have shown it in college, he can project as an NBA player? Just a guy whose shooting may not stand out as a strength right now, but when you look at these certain statistics, you really think he could improve in that area significantly. What stats really stand out to you when you're looking at these prospects?
Yeah, I think a lot of people see, you know, raw three-point percentage and get way too caught up in that. You know, it's why a prospect like Tyrese Maxey is getting overlooked, because, you know, 3-point percentage is so, you know, just so, you know, it takes forever to stabilize. You know, there's been research that suggested that it takes around 750 3-point attempts for percentage to stabilize, which is more than most college players and NBA prospects will shoot in their entire career. So most NBA draft prospects will not have a stable sample of three-point shots, which makes it incredibly hard to use raw percentage as, you know, as an indicator. And I think the most important indicator to me is volume. Good three-point shooters take a lot of threes. That's pretty much a constant across the board. If you're attempting threes, and then not only attempting threes, but attempting a variety of types of threes and difficult shots as well. You know, are you taking pull-up threes or off-movement threes, off flare screens, off pin downs? Are you taking pick-and-pop threes? Is it not just spot-ups? And I think, you know, a prospect who's kind of fallen into the trap here, that trap of value is did is current Memphis is Justice Winslow, who shot 42% from three in college, but only took 100 threes, and pretty much all of them were spot ups. And, you know, he's been up and down, had his struggles as a 3-point shooter, but certainly not what a lot of evaluators thought. I think those are the most important things to look at for me. Free throw percentage is oft talked about as an important indicator. I think it very much is. I think it can get misused. And the most important things to look at are obviously volume. If you shot 25 free throws, it's not going to tell you much. But you want to look for prospects who are very good free throw shooters and very bad free throw shooters. Very good, meaning like 87, 88 plus percent on high volume. You know, your Damian Lillard's, your Tyler Heroes, your Steph Curry's, all of those hit those free throw marks and, you know, we're great NBA shooters. And then the opposite. Prospects who are really, you know, poor free throw shooters. I talked about earlier with Precious is one of my big concerns. You know, sub 60, those prospects tend to not be good NBA shooters in most cases. There's a couple more things we have. Touch is kind of hard to quantify. It's a bit nebulous. It's kind of a thing where, you know, you can try to use runners as a data point, but it's hard to have a sample of runners that's significant. So it's a lot of just intuition and eye test. You know, a guy like Trae Young obviously has incredible touch as a finisher, and you can see that. So I think that's in someone like Luka Doncic. So I think that's in Brandon Clark. Even Brandon Clark's touch is elite at Ja Morant. So, you know, you can see that easily, and, you know, that's a thing to project. And then the last thing is mechanics, the jump shot form, which I am no shot doctor. I don't proclaim to be an expert on shot mechanics, but I think there are a couple easy things that you can look at. One, is the shot consistently the same? Because that's an indicator. I think that's a good indicator that if they're not changing their release or their shot every time, you know, and just other, I'll give an example of that. Like Desmond Bane has a little bit of a wonky looking shot, but he gets it off the same way every time. And, you know, he can organize himself with different footworks, one twos, hops, and it's all the same. And he's most of all, you know, effective. And then, I mean, you can look for obvious, obvious issues where the elbow's way flared out or the wrist flicks in an obviously weird way or the lower body's flailing in an unnatural looking way. Something that pretty much anybody can pick up on if they're watching intently. That's not that hard. So those are the main things I look for when I'm trying to project shooting. Well, you know, and often like a lot of it is tough. It's kind of a guessing game at its heart. It's more of a hypothesis game really, but there are definitely some ways we can make it a little more scientific, and that's kind of my process when I'm looking at shooting evaluation.
You know, as shooting has become more in-depth to really analyze, as analytics have you know, become a bigger part of the game, I think another byproduct of those analytics is, okay, you've got a guy who's a great shooter, and that's important in today's game. You really want to add that, but also you don't want to sit here and add a guy who, you know, kind of like a Grant Riller, you know, who there's question marks about. You know, there's depth in his scoring ability, getting to the rim, shooting different types of threes. He seems to be a very resourceful scorer, perhaps one of the best in this draft, but also there's questions about his defense. A little bit about these guys who, yeah, their shooting potential is great, and that's valuable in today's game, but you don't want their offensive value negated by their defensive limitations. Do you think that has kind of come into play when NBA talent evaluators really look at these prospects? You know, as good as their potential is on offense, is it going to be negated by their lack of potential across the board or on defense?
I think it has to be, and I think that's kind of overlooked pretty often. I mean, for Grant Riller, I have some concerns, but I think he's such a special scoring prospect that the defensive concerns are kind of worth the risk for him. I think he's really special, but I do think that comes in for a lot of prospects. You know, somebody who I think of a couple prospects, somebody like Emmanuel Quickley, Lord on the draft, who's an incredible shooter, you know, in a lot of different ways, checks all the boxes you want from a shooting prospect, but he's 6'3", he's a poor defender, and he doesn't really bring much other utility on offense. So because of that, I think it's going to be hard for him to really find a place. You know, people will look at Duncan Robinson, who's like, oh, you know, he's just a great shooter. So why can't I see like someone like Emmanuel Quickley or like Justinian Jessup and projecting the same? Well, you know, Duncan Robinson, 6'7", actually has some pretty impressive decision-making skill and is just like, it's hard to project anyone to get to the level of shooter Duncan Robinson was this year. Like, he was so elite, it's just hard to project anyone to get there. I think you just got to be careful, but the defense absolutely matters because, you know, even, you know, Duncan had his struggles on defense, but was just so good on offense to make up for them. I think, you know, even a guy higher in the draft, like, you know, Aaron Nesmith, who is an elite movement shooter, you know, probably the best in the draft, but really has questionable movement skills to me on the ball. Not that strong, has some problems as an off-ball defender as well. Someone who's, again, going to have to be a really high-level shooter to bring that kind of value. You know, obviously he's better than Quickley because he's bigger and has a little more skill. But, yeah, I think I'm generally lower on just pure shooting as a skill. It's super valuable, but I think you really need more than shooting to bring a lot of value as a role player, especially if you're not defending, you know, defending at a high level as well. So I just think it's important to look at, you know, the consummate package instead of, you know, just seeing a great shooter and assuming he's going to have an easy fit in the NBA just because of that shooting.
So we'll get right into it then with the Grizzlies, and I'm not sure if you – I tried to look. I'm not sure if you've done a mock draft yet, but knowing that the Grizzlies, you know, shooting is a need. They probably could use secondary playmaking. Another developmental prospect, especially on the wing in the front court, makes sense for them. I know that a couple of guys who are local products here in terms of where they went to school, like an Isaiah Joe or Mason Jones, could be guys who have that type of upside. But not to get too into depth, don't want you to throw out 10 names or anything, but when you're on the clock for the Grizzlies at 40, if they keep that pick there, knowing those type of things that they probably need, just some names you think stand out that, you know, not only are good fits or upside plays as steals for Memphis, who has shown recently, like you said, to be a team that, you know, seems to really think progressively when it comes to their draft picks.
I can't really think of a better one than Isaiah Joe, to be honest. I mean, besides, you know, we talked about Tilly, he'd be great. Isaiah Joe is one that I love Isaiah Joe. I think he's a top 20 pick prospect in this class. The shooting, first and foremost, gives you all you want. Yes, he had a down year in terms of raw percentage, but, you know, is an audacious shooter with the difficulty and the volume and has all that, has some self-creation upside, I think, as well, is a really underrated passer and a defender, aggressive, sometimes over-aggressive, but a really smart off-ball defender. Just, you know, the big issue with Isaiah Joe is he's just so frail, you know, more frail than most young prospects are, especially, you know, ones that are 21 already like he is. he really needs to, you know, improve physically to survive in the NBA. But if he does, I think the upside with him is really high, as, you know, a guy who could be an elite shooter with some, like I said, lots of complementary skills. So I think Isaiah Joe is one of the names that I look at as, you know, being an awesome sleeper there for them. Let me think. I mean, we talked about Tillman, Tilly, Riller. You know, I've kind of hit on all of my favorite sleepers at this point. I like Nate Hinton a lot. I think he's probably going to be someone you're able to get undrafted, if we're being honest. He's a wing forward type from Houston. He definitely has issues offensively, as he's kind of like a 6'5" four man, given that the shot is questionable. But if they can get him to shoot, you know, an elite team defender with crazy range and instincts, and just like an elite, like a uniquely elite guard, you know, wing rebounder. So he can really solid like 3-and-D wing if he figures out the shot. He's another prospect I really like there. Those are the main guys. Maybe someone like, it seems like someone like prospects like Malachi Flynn and Desmond Bane are getting to the point where they're, you know, too widely appreciated to fall to 40. It's kind of, you know, thinking about it, it's kind of like, in terms of the second round picks who are projected, it's not that strong of a second round class. You know, just like looking at like Tankathon at some of the prospects they have in that 40 range: Cassius Stanley, Reggie Perry, Daniel Turu, Jordan Wara, Paul Reed, Elijah Hughes. You know, these are a lot of prospects I don't think are particularly good. You know, so I think the main ones you're looking at are definitely Tilly, Isaiah Joe, Grant Riller, if he's there. Even, you know, a prospect like Sam Merrill could be good, you know, a bit older, definitely, you know, much older. He's, you know, 24 and a half, but, you know, was an elite shooter at Utah State and actually has some of those complementary skills. I think he's an underrated passer, you know, a pretty solid defender. Just the athleticism is a question. Not a guy who I'm, you know, as high on as 40, but I think at that point of the draft, you know, you get to the point where it's just like, get your guy. And if he's, you know, the guy from Memphis who's going to be a shooter for them with some plus skills, I think that makes sense.
From the prospect profiles that I've done so far myself, Ben, I can honestly tell you, you know, those are two guys that really stood out, that like, when you look at these talents, you know, this is the guy that, based off just seeing Taylor Jenkins' preferences, you know, maybe you don't want to draft for need there, but need, you know, it certainly fits that role, and then upside as well. I think Joe and Tilly, you know, are two names that make some sense as well. Ben, can't thank you enough. Before we end this show with you, I do want to, we'd love to have you again. So certainly want to give you a chance to kind of, you know, plug what you've got going on. I know you do both podcasting and writing, but where can folks find a lot of your work? I know that you're kind of local here. You attend Missouri, is that right?
Yeah, I go to the University of Missouri. So local-ish, close-ish. I mean, not like a state over or so, but so yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. I mean the main thing I do in terms of the draft is I co-host the Prep to Pro pod with my friend Max Carlin. We have, you know, weekly, bi-weekly, sometimes three times a week episodes on, you know, all things draft, from this draft to, you know, starting preparation for next year's class, because, you know, the college basketball season is quietly approaching quickly, which is kind of crazy. But so that's the main thing. You know, I'd love if you listen to our pod. You know, there's definitely a lot of, if you enjoyed the content today, lots of similar stuff on there. Probably going to have a final draft board out at some point. Not sure what that's going to look like, but I should have that at some point. Yeah, I mean, I do most of my written draft content at the Rookie Wire, USA Today. Some, you know, I've done some stuff at the Step Back, Fansided, SB Nations, Bird Rights. Those are the main draft things that I'm currently doing. So, yeah, I mean, and just, you know, for the main place you can find my content is just on Twitter. I'm always on Twitter at Ben_Pfeiffer_. And yeah, like, you know, like Sean mentioned in the beginning, go check us out on Locker Room. We're live in the App Store. Lots of really cool content on there coming from me, and I think from lots of other people. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
His name is Ben Pfeiffer. Ben, if you'll stick with us for just a second, we will obviously try to get Ben back on, may even do a little mock drafting with him, but I can't thank him enough for joining us. As always, thank you enough for joining us. You can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSAC, the podcast wherever it is, Spotify, Stitcher, the podcast app on your phone, wherever you enjoy your podcast. For Ben Pfeiffer, my name is Sean Coleman. We will continue our prospect profiles through the end of this week. And until we talk to you again, hope you have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.